Welcome into episode 3 of The Install with Greg Cosell of NFL Films. Return from his travels is Greg Cosell. It's good to see you, buddy. I hope everything went well.
Fuck yeah, I got was fortunate to be invited out to the Chargers training camp. So I took my final trip of this offseason, and now it's time to hunker down in my office at NFL Films and get ready for another season.
So what do those trips look like for you? I don't want you to go into more detail than you're comfortable giving people, because I know the good stuff is for NFL matchup, of course. But
when you have conversations with coaches and general managers, you know, I a lot of that stuff, you know, I keep to myself or I use in ways that help as I'm watching tape. That's for me, it's constantly learning. You hear a coach, you know, talk about something in a given way. You hear him talk about a scheme or a personnel package, and it just then helps me further as I watch tape. It gives me more food for thought. It resonates differently in my mind and then allows me to see something in a more expansive way. I love talking personnel with general managers, you know, just because I do so much, as you know, college work, evaluating college players leading up to the draft. So it's just always more to learn, more information to talk about and share. Those are the things that kind of they're fuel for me. They just keep helping me hopefully do my job better.
In all elements of life, more information is a good thing, but we don't but that's something that is best saved for another day. So we're going to talk about the Chargers are going to be fascinating. I think the entire league is looking at Justin Herbert in year two and wondering what the next progression of that is. But certainly today we're going to get into the AFC contenders. The Chargers not quite there yet. We'll see how much further they can make that leap heading into 2021. But I wanted Greg to get into the biggest competitors for Tennessee heading into their conference this year. Of course, the infamous names are the Chiefs, the Ravens, and the Bills, who have had so much success over this last couple of years under their current coaching staffs. And, of course, the Ravens and the Chiefs have been in this for a good bit longer than the Bills have, but Sean McDermott has been steadily building that thing up. I guess when you look at the AFC landscape as a whole, am I leaving anybody out of that conversation that we should be including?
That's a good question. Yeah, and you know how this works, Buck. Every year there's a team or two that come out. I'm just going to actually turn around. I don't want people to think I'm ignoring you. And just look at the teams that I have on my bulletin board behind me. It's funny, not because I was just there, but I find the Chargers interesting for this reason. And let's just stay with the Chargers. Obviously, I was just there.
Sure.
But they've got the quarterback, and it starts there. We know that in this league, it starts there. But they have Brandon Staley as the head coach. And keep in mind what he did with the Rams defense a year ago. And now he's with the Chargers defense, and they've got some players on defense. I'm fascinated to see how Brandon Staley deploys Derwin James, who hopefully can stay healthy for a full season, because he's a really talented player who can be used in multiple ways. So as you said, probably sitting here right now as we start the month of August coming up in a few days, and training camps have just started, I don't think anybody's looking at the Chargers and saying they're truly ready to compete. But I would argue that they're one of the most intriguing teams in the AFC because they do have the quarterback. And by the way, I had seen Justin Herbert before up close and personal, because when I go to the combine, I'm fortunate to be on the field. But just seeing him again, he is a big dude. And boy, can he throw the football, and he's athletic. So you have that guy. They've got a really good receiving core. They've retooled their offensive line, which was not very good a year ago. People lose sight of the fact that Herbert had an outstanding rookie season behind a poor offensive line, Buck. And now they've really retooled that with the first round pick in Rashawn Slater. They signed Corey Linsley from the Packers. They have Brian Bulaga, who was injured last year. He's back at right tackle. That's 3/5 of what'll be a pretty good offensive line. So the big question is their defense, and with Brandon Staley there, he's one of the most creative young defensive minds in the league. So they're an intriguing team. I know they were not one of the three teams we were going to spend a little more detailed time on today, but they're just a team to watch.
Oh, and there's always teams like that, as you mentioned, that get that growth or that retool their personnel and find ways to enhance their competitive advantage heading into the season. If we did win-loss records and things of that nature based on last year's results, wouldn't be a very productive exercise. So exciting to see what the Chargers are going to be able to do. But speaking of big, physical, talented quarterbacks, I guess the best place to start with that is Josh Allen, Greg. Was there a player in your evaluation? I know you guys, I know you tend to do more film study on the whole and notice individual performances during your tape study as opposed to pinpointing individual players.
Well, quarterbacks, I do pinpoint.
Sure. So from that element then, Greg, was there a player that you've seen that's taken as big as a step forward as Josh Allen did last year?
Well, let me say this. We know Patrick Mahomes is great, but Patrick Mahomes is 6'2 and about 210. I've stood next to Patrick Mahomes.
Right.
I've also stood next to Justin Herbert and Josh Allen. And I would make the argument that just in terms of physical gifts, which imposing size is a physical gift, by the way, in football, I would say that Justin Herbert and Josh Allen are the two most physically gifted quarterbacks in the league, which is different from saying, as we speak today, Buck, they're the best quarterbacks in the league. That's a different conversation. But Josh Allen, and I've stood right next to him and stood next to him while he's throwing a football, and the ball comes out of his hand a little bit differently than the average bear.
Sure.
And he is a big, big man who we know is really athletic. So you're starting with him, and their offense starts with the pass game. Yes, they do want to run it, and they want to run it successfully, but they will not be a volume running team. They will not be. They were not a year ago. They will not be this year. Allen, as you mentioned, improved significantly a year ago. Much of it stemmed from mechanics work because he's always had the power arm. He's always been a great athlete. But the mechanics work, working with Jordan Palmer and his group, basically since he came into the league, but that has really changed him from a ball location perspective because his issue was twofold. He tended to be just a drive thrower, a power thrower, without the touch and pace that's demanded on given throws. And the ball location. Ball location was an issue for him. Last year, he really showed the ability to be much better with his pace and touch, and I can see specific throws in my mind's eye. And he was just incredibly more accurate, more precise is the better word, with his ball location. And I think he surprised so many people because you normally don't see that in the NFL. You don't see a player improve that dramatically with his ball location. And I know for a fact he's a laser-focused young kid who's an incredibly hard worker. I wouldn't expect him to go backwards. I mean, I can't sit here and say he's going to complete 69.2% of his passes. No one, you know, those are things you can't really say.
Right.
But I don't believe he'll go backwards. And offensively, Buck, they're a big three wide receiver team. I believe they lined up with four wide receivers as much or more than any team in the league last year, what we call 10 personnel, meaning one back, no tight end, four wide receivers. This is an offense built around Josh Allen, often being in the shotgun.
What are the advantages of 10 personnel for an offense other than playing to the skill sets of the players that you have on the roster?
Well, you're dictating to the defense how many defenses can go four deep with corners.
Right.
If they choose to do that, I mean, teams will often then, if teams don't play dime, meaning six defensive backs, it's that if that's not part of what they normally do, and not every team in the league plays with dime. There are probably seven or eight teams in the league that are pretty much pure nickel sub defenses, meaning when they go to their sub, they're playing with five DBs, not six. So now you have an advantage because if you're going to play with five DBs versus four wide receivers, more often than not, a high percentage of the time, you're going to have to play zone because you can't match up man-to-man to one of those four wideouts if you only have three corners on the field.
Right.
So and unless you feel you have a safety that's a true man-to-man defender, and, you know, there's not 30 of those guys in the league. So and the other factor is if you go four wide and you're an intermediate vertical route running team, which that's a large part of what the Bills do, and you have a quarterback that can run as Josh Allen can, you're spreading the defense both horizontally and vertically, and you're creating some space for your quarterback to run if he chooses to. If it presents itself, you're creating a lot of space for him to gain yards. So if it's, you know, third and seven, he can certainly run for at least 7 yards. So there's a lot of advantages to it. Now, obviously, you've got to be able to protect. And I think the Bills would say they probably want to improve in that area. I think they have some good individual players on their O-line, but they need to improve overall in terms of their pass protection. But again, Josh Allen can also get you out of some bad situations.
No question about it. That was what drove me crazy, I think, the most, Greg, in the analysis of what made such a substantial difference for Josh Allen is people, I think the general talking point, it just became mostly about Stephon Diggs. And there was no question that they put better talent around him.
And he's a great receiver. That's not the point. Yes.
Of course. But with Cole Beasley and John Brown, who's no longer on the team, Stephon Diggs in that mix, and then Dawson Knox, the tight end, a local product, out of Brentwood, that it seemed to me, what I guess did Stephon Diggs allow them to enhance the route concepts that they were running, or how did he better fit what they want to do as opposed to previous Bills wide receivers that haven't been able to maximize that offense?
Well, I think when you have a receiver like that, number one, there's a comfort level for a quarterback, because when you do get one-on-one coverage, man-to-man coverage, you feel very good throwing him the football. You know, you feel confident that he's going to create enough separation and space that you have somewhere to throw the ball comfortably. And I think that's number one. That's probably the main thing, Buck, because, you know, in this league, teams play man to man. There's more man to man being played for any number of reasons. One being that there's more quick game throws in this league, more three-step, five-step drop throws. And your pass rush does not get to the quarterback versus quick game. So how do you disrupt the pass game if you can't get to the quarterback? You have to disrupt the receivers. So therefore, teams play more man coverage, more press man. And Diggs, by the way, is good against press man. So, you know, Diggs just presents an option for a quarterback that is really strong. And number two, there will be teams that want to double Stephon Diggs, because in given situations, he's the guy. So what does that do? It presents opportunities for others. And, you know, now you're giving them one-on-one. Sometimes teams can go hybrid coverages, play man to dig, zone to the other side. So it helps. When you have a really good receiver like that, very often it can help define coverage before the snap of the ball. And that's what you're trying to do for your quarterback, Buck. The idea is to give your quarterback as much pre-snap information as possible before the ball is snapped.
Leslie Frazier on the other side of the ball has been in this league for forever. He's been a defensive coordinator. He's been a head coach. And he seemed to really make strides over the course of the season with his unit. Now, defenses were at a disadvantage last year anyway because of the lack of practice time, the lack of offseason reps that they were able to have because COVID did the things that it did to our society a year ago that it seems getting ready to do again now, but we won't get into that. With Leslie Frazier's defense, though, where did you see them make the most significant steps forward to where by the end of the season they were legitimately a unit that you feared playing against?
Well, they're an interesting unit because this is a unit both with Sean McDermott, whose background is defense on the defensive side, and Leslie, who's been doing this for a really long time, is they're really built more on discipline, fundamental execution. Sure, they blitz. Every team blitzes. But they are built more on four-man D-line, a lot of zone coverage. You know, like I said, everybody plays more man, and they've incorporated more man than, let's say, Sean or Leslie played maybe 4, 5, 6 years ago, because the league evolves. You have to evolve with the league. But this is a team that is really fundamentally sound. They play a ton of nickel. They did a year ago. They played their slot corner, Teron Johnson. I think they played nickel 90% of their snaps. And they have two outstanding nickel linebackers. And this is rarely talked. We rarely talk about linebackers when we talk about sub defenses. We always think in terms of pass rush and corners, right? We rarely talk about linebackers.
Right.
And they have a nickel linebacking duo in Edmonds and Matt Milano, a very overlooked player. I never use the word underrated, because the teams in the league, the coaches, they know about it. He's not underrated. He's overlooked by media people, but he's not underrated. There's right. a difference. And Milano and Edmonds are really good nickel linebackers. And Milano can do a lot of things. Edmonds is 6'5", 255, and he can run. So they're really critical components of their sub-nickel defense. And as I said, they played in their sub-nickel probably 85 to 90% of their defensive snaps a year ago.
Yeah, no, it's funny that you bring that up, the term underrated, because I literally just got off the radio with Coach Dave McGinnis and had the same conversation. So we were talking about guys who are being overlooked in Titans training camp, and he made sure to remind me, just as you've done, Greg, for our audience, that these guys don't get underrated by the coaching staffs and by the league themselves. It's just by general, you know, talking heads such as myself who don't have the information and don't have the access to the personnel evaluations that people do.
When you're fortunate, like I am and Coach Mack, to watch tape, you know, the people who watch tape know what these players are. So Milano might be overlooked, you know, by the media, but he's not underrated by teams that are studying the Bills defense.
Without question. And financially, he was compensated for that skill set that he was.
Because it's a pretty good one. And, you know, an interesting background story on Milano is he played at Boston College when a coordinator named Don Brown, who's been in college football for 100 years and is highly respected, when Don Brown was the DC at Boston College, and then Don Brown moved to Michigan. So Matt Milano played the same position at Boston College under John Brown that Jabril Peppers played at Michigan under Don Brown.
Okay, that's fascinating, and that clearly comes across in the way that he's been able to adapt his skill set to the pro game. Elsewhere in the AFC, Greg, this is the first time, you know, you and I are just starting to get to interact with each other on a regular basis, so we've never really had a conversation about Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson.
Right.
I've heard your analysis of Lamar, of course. The NFL matchup show is a staple for me over the weekend, heading into the weekend of football during the regular season. But what on face value, as Lamar Jackson gets ready to negotiate a contract and seeing guys like Dak Prescott and Patrick Mahomes get paid, where are you on Lamar Jackson right now as a player? And is it as much about how he's used in Baltimore as it is the player himself?
You hit it right on the head, because they're the only team in the league whose offense, the foundation of their offense, is built on the quarterback as a runner.
Yeah.
And it will be very interesting to see if they start moving away from that. Not that he's not going to run. Obviously, he's the best runner of all the quarterbacks in the league. He's a unique physical talent in terms of his athleticism as a runner. No question about that. And you're still going to use that. But I would bet if you spoke, as I have, to defensive coaches throughout the league, they would tell you that that offense needs to become more expansive with the pass game. Now, it's unknown as to whether they can do that. Lamar Jackson, look, I've done a deep dive on Lamar in terms of film study in each of the last two summers.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say he's a poor thrower of the football. I wouldn't say he's a great thrower of the football. I think the kinds of things you look for when you study Lamar are just the details and the nuance of being efficient from the pocket. Because don't forget, Lamar Jackson, my guess is from the time he put on a football uniform and a helmet, was probably the best athlete on the field by a wide margin.
Sure.
So he always knew that if he dropped back to pass, and for whatever reason he just didn't see it, he knew that he could run and be really good at it. And he's still really good at it at this level. Look, Titans fans will remember last year in the playoff game on 3rd and 9 from the 49 or 50 yard line, when it seemed like, you know, the game was really tight and looked like the Titans had a real good chance to win that game and move on. And he runs, you know, 50 yards for a touchdown. There's no question he can do that at any given point in a game. But there needs to be more consistency overall in their pass game, particularly on third down. Now, if you look at his third down numbers, they're okay. They're fine. You know, people who are listening to this and just look up his numbers say, you don't know what you're talking about. That's not what I'm getting at. When I sit and watch the tape, there are certain things that you notice. And I guarantee that the Ravens are working with him on this, because as a coach, you're trying to get your player to play perfectly. That's how you coach it. That's the goal. As good as Lamar is, they don't just roll the ball out and say, you know what, Lamar, when it's 3rd and 9, we're not even going to call a play. Why don't you just run around? They don't do it that way. So when I watched the tape, there's a couple of things that stood out. Number one, he has a tendency to leave the pocket prematurely. So he leaves throws on the field. So, for instance, it's very easy to say, well, they need better receivers. Well, and now they have Sammy Watkins, and they drafted a Bateman from Minnesota, whose tape I liked a lot. But if he's going to leave the pocket prematurely and not throw the ball when the routes indicate that the ball should be thrown, then you know what? The receivers don't matter. They won't put up numbers. And then people will keep saying they need receivers. So he needs to get better at delivering the football within the structure of the offense on third down. And number two, he has a tendency, and this is coachable, he has a tendency to climb the pocket, meaning step up into the pocket when there's no reason to. So, Buck, what happens when you do that? What are you doing? You're moving into the pass rush.
Right.
So you're creating your own pressure. Now, are there plays where he does that and then gets out of his own pressure because he's special? Sure. But you've still got to work on that because that disrupts the timing of the pass game. So there's a balance with quarterbacks that have great improvisational second reaction movement. There's always a balance between playing the position efficiently and effectively from the pocket and then making plays outside the pocket. And it's a balance. Look, it's like in basketball when a guy takes that 3-point shot and the coach goes, no, 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 no. Yes. When it goes in,
right.
You know, with Lamar, it's like, no, don't do that. And then he runs for 20 yards. So yeah. There's a balance, but you're still trying to teach him how to be as efficient as you can possibly be playing from the pocket. And I guarantee they're still working on that.
Something that we saw Dean Pease very much take advantage of in that 2019
Absolutely.
Divisional round game. Lamar, for all the numbers that he was able to put up, you could see that he was creating his own pressure and the plays that he would make to get out of his own pressure, spectacular because of the athlete that we all know him to be. But the Titans in that year, really, it showed up on tape how they were able to take advantage of those flaws that you're describing. I'm watching plays back in my mind's eye as we talk about this.
That's a great point, Buck, because it was a game in which they ended up running 90 plays and gaining 500 yards of offense and
right.
scoring a touchdown. Now, they had a few fluky fumbles as well, no question, but it was also a game that the Titans went up 14-0. Some may have argued that the Ravens got away from their offense, which, as I said, it's built on Lamar as a runner, and they asked him to become a drop-back passer pretty early in that game, and that's still the question. Like I said, it's not that he can't throw. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say, gee, he can't throw. That's wrong. You know, he's made some outstanding throws in his NFL career. The question is, when you do get to the drop back pass game, when you don't have the run game element that really stresses and pressures defenses, is he good enough just to be a drop back passer if the game demands it? And clearly 2 years ago in the playoffs, despite numbers, he wasn't really good enough to do that. And I guarantee Dean Pease, if you caught him in a moment of being open and honest, would tell you the same thing.
That's one of the things I miss most about Dean Pease in Tennessee is he was uncommonly open and honest with us in the media availabilities that we'd get with him. I learned so much about football from that man, even as he was very cautious in dealing
sure.
with the media. With the defensive side of the ball, Greg, they were able to do something to Tennessee last year in that postseason game, the wild card round that the Ravens ended up winning here in Nashville. They were able to do something in that game that nobody else had really done throughout the course of the season, which was
right.
find ways to neutralize the Titans offense. Now, I think a great deal of it was we finally started to see pressure off the left side, certainly in stopping the run. The absence of Taylor Lewan, I think, was noticed a great deal more in that game than it had been in other in previous instances with Ty Sambrello and David Quessenberry filling in admirably on that. But what from that defensive game plan that the Ravens had, how were they able to do it, I guess, is a long way of asking the question.
Well, let's just talk a little more about there. We'll end up talking about the Titans as we, you know, obviously training camp just started.
Sure.
We'll end up talking a lot more about the Titans and their offense and how it functions as we go along. And obviously they've got a new coordinator, and I'm sure you're getting a chance to hear him talk as well, Todd Downing. But, you know, one of the things I think that the Ravens defense does particularly well is they make it difficult to identify people with their multiple front looks. And people think of that solely in the pass game, you know, in other words, in terms of pass protection, trying to identify potential rushers who are not first level defenders, you know, meaning D linemen. You know, they make it really difficult to identify second level defenders, where they're coming from, even third level defenders. But that's a factor too, Buck, in the run game, because you know, they're still blocking assignments in the run game, you know, so they're just really good at muddying those looks and making it very difficult to identify people. And don't forget, when you play the Titans, and we know that Tannehill's, you know, done really well since he took over from Mariota in 2019, but when you play the Titans, you are making certain that you stop the run game. That's your defensive focus and foundation going in. As good as Tannehill's been, you, number one, want to say, let's make them have to throw the football. And, you know, fortunately, that game was close enough for the most part where the Titans could stay with the run, but they weren't efficient staying with the run.
Right.
And, you know, this is a defense that Wink Martindale does such a good job with in terms of the term that's now thrown around a lot is kind of positionless players, players who can move around a lot. Like Matthew Judon, who's not there anymore, was a great example of that. I think Tyus Bowser, who will essentially replace Judon this year, he was a 2017 draft choice out of the University of Houston. And this kid's highly, highly athletic. So, you know, I think, you know, he'll be that guy. They drafted Owe from Penn State late in the first round. And this kid is, he's a freak. I mean, he is an athletic freak. He'll probably fit that role as well, because even though he was essentially a defensive end at Penn State, you can stand him up and move him around because his athletic measurables are just off the charts. So they're a fascinating defense in terms of how they move people around, how they muddy the looks, how they make it difficult to identify people both in the run game and in pass protection. And that's really what their foundation is defensively.
It's why I'm always hesitant once we get to free agency, and inevitably there's a Ravens pass rusher that's available, whether it's Judon or Za'Darius Smith before him, Pernell McPhee, guys like that, because I look at the way that you've described and how the Ravens utilize these dudes and think, well, there's really not, there are other people in the league who do similar things with disguise and with their fronts in the run game and in the pass game, but the Ravens have done it so creatively that I'm not exactly sure what I'm looking at in the player specifically outside of the system.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And you have to be a really good teacher. And I don't know Wink Martindale personally, but you have to be a really good teacher to do that. Because keep in mind, Buck, if one guy is in the wrong gap or steps in the wrong way, I mean, you know, you can give up a 50-yard run. You know, if you talk to coaches, they'll tell you that most of the long runs in this league occur not because they're beautifully blocked. Obviously, there are some that are, but very more often than not, a higher percentage of the time, long runs occur in this league because a defensive player does not play with the required gap integrity. That's the way more long runs occur in this league. So if you're going to be very multiple with your front looks and move people around, then you have to teach that really well, because if one guy makes a mistake, and certainly that's the case against the Derrick Henrys of the world, and there's not 20 Derrick Henrys as we know, then and I don't think Henry's, what was his longest run in that game, like 6 or 7 yards? I don't remember the exact, but he did not have a 10 plus yard run in that game, I do not believe. Then you have to make sure that it is taught and executed exactly right, because one misstep defensively and Henry's off to the races. We know that. We've seen it too many times.
Titans fans have PTSD every time you bring up gap integrity, because that was not something that Jadeveon Clowney did very well. He tended to freelance a little more than I think they would have liked here.
Well, he's a whole different Tennessee. Conversation, but the league has told you what Jadeveon Clowney is, because 28 year old players who are supposed to be great edge rushers are not with their fourth team. And so, you know what the league is telling you? Jadeveon Clowney is not a great edge rusher.
Yeah. Finally, we'll wrap up this episode of the install with the Kansas City Chiefs, who made it back to the Super Bowl to try and defend their title. The offensive line was in tatters by the end of that season. Patrick Mahomes running for his life back there and still was able to make near completions that were otherworldly, throwing from base, having his body basically horizontal and still getting the ball off platform. It seems like a basic question to ask, Greg, now having seen these two working together for so long, but how have Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy been able to maximize the skill set of the quarterback? Because when it comes to their receiving talent, Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce are of course great, but Watkins and Mecole Hardman, in the last couple of years, it's not like they've been overwhelmingly talented in the way that the other two skill position players are.
Well, but they've got dimensions. See, you know, it's funny you say that, because Hardman, who knows, he may never be a volume target, but Mecole Hardman can run.
Yes.
I mean, I remember he had that touchdown, I believe it was 2 years ago, a 63-yard touchdown against the Titans over the middle, and then he broke away from everybody. I'm pretty sure that was 2008.
Patrick Mahomes on a bad knee, just whipping that one down.
Right, right. So crazy. You remember the play I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
But Hardman is a dimension because of his vertical ability, so you have to be aware of that. That impacts the way you play defense, because – this game, if you're reducing it to the Cliff Notes or Spark Notes version, as I guess it's talked about today, this game is about explosives on offense and preventing explosives on defense. And Hardman, when he's in the game, you know, he's an explosive, and you can't, even though he's not going to catch 80 balls for 1400 yards over the course of the season, you have to be very careful when he's on the field, keeping in mind that Tyreek Hill's on the field also.
Right.
So let's talk about their O-line, though, because you brought that up. They've addressed that. They traded for Orlando Brown, who's going to play left tackle. They signed Joe Tooney from the Patriots, who's a very good guard. And it's very possible that they could end up starting two rookies. Creed Humphrey, a center from Oklahoma at center, who is just one of those really efficient players. His college tape at Oklahoma, you just watch him and you came away saying, you know what, this guy's going to be a 10-year NFL player. He's just a really efficient player, understands leverage, understands angles, you know, not purely powerful. He's not necessarily going to blow you away, but he just understands angles. And then someone who you probably know well from UT, Trey Smith, who sure. lasted until the sixth round. I guess he lasted there for some medical reason. I forget.
He was dealing with blood clots over the course of his career that had triggered a lot of medical red flags throughout the course of the draft process, because I remember watching him fall so late that it was feasible for the Titans to address that position with him.
And he'll be interesting, because to me, watching his tape, Buck, I thought he was a far better run blocker than pass protector, but he's a huge man. And that kind of size, that's a trait, that's an attribute in pass protection. Now, he may have a chance to start at right guard. We know Kyle Long's on the PUP list, so Trey Smith may get a chance to be the starting right guard. And at right tackle, they've got someone who they drafted in 2020 named Lucas Niang, who I think, you know, after a year could easily be their starting right tackle. He's an athletic kid. So they've addressed their offensive line pretty significantly. And, you know, it'll be a better O-line. Plus, they're getting Duvernay Tardif back, and who sat out last year due to COVID, because he's a doctor as well. And he wanted to take part in, you know, helping others. So, you know, this O-line will be meaningfully better in 2021.
From a talent standpoint, I don't know that I've in my lifetime of watching football have seen a purely talented player the way that Patrick Mahomes is. We've talked about coaching and playing within the system. Quarterbacks are brought up and taught to play within the system. And we've talked about the ability to make plays outside of the system when the play breaks down around you. How much do they balance that in Kansas City to where you're not trying to box Mahomes in too much by playing within the confines, but also making sure that he's executing what he's supposed to? How much growth have you seen from him in that regard?
Well, the thing about Andy Reid's offense, he has very defined principles and concepts. So I would never say any offense is easy, because none are easy. And there's always different checks and different tweaks and different adjustments. And those things take time to learn, no matter how smart your quarterback is. And Mahomes is very smart and very aware. But Andy's offense is pretty well defined. I mean, when you sit and watch tape, you see the concepts. They're there. And they're pretty clear. He gets to them in different ways, but the concepts are the concepts. And sometimes, and I've spoken to defensive coordinators about this, every defensive coordinator knows Andy's concepts. Right. Andy's not tricking people. Most coaches are not winning because they're tricking people. But so what happens very often, teams do a nice job defending his concepts because they're pretty well known. Andy's been doing this a long time. And then he has Mahomes, who's capable of doing things that others are not. And, you know, you don't want to limit his ability to do that. So you just kind of allow Mahomes to play within the system when it's there. And then if he feels the need to step outside the system, you don't want to limit that. And keep a couple of other things in mind. We haven't even talked about this, is Travis Kelce gives you so much for this reason. Coaches have told me, and I noticed this on film too, that when you have a tight end who you can line up as the single receiver to the short side of the field, what we call the boundary X, on the backside of trips, meaning on the backside of three receivers to the wide side of the field. When you have a tight end who can do that, Buck, that really allows a quarterback to know what the defense will be before the snap of the ball. And those kinds of tight ends are really, really important in this league. There's more and more of them because there's more coming into the league who are like that, but not every tight end can do that. So you can make the argument that Kelce is the most critical piece as a receiver. One thing they absolutely love to do, and it's really hard to defend, is put Kelce as that single receiver to the boundary, and then with the, to the three receiver side, line up Tyreek Hill as what we call number three, the receiver who's closest to the formation, the inside slot to the trip side. That is really difficult to defend, because if you're not playing man, let's say you're playing zone, that means Hill is working against linebackers and safeties when he runs those vertical routes. And that is tough.
Yeah. I mean, they're dangerous because they are physically overwhelming. They're incredibly talented, and because they know what you're doing before the snap.
And the quarterback's not too bad. He's got a chance.
Quarterback's okay.
Yeah, he's got a chance to make it, I think.
All three of these teams going to present big issues for the Tennessee Titans throughout the course of their pursuit of postseason and beyond. Certainly, we've appreciated this preview with Greg Cosell. Greg, thanks as always for making us smarter, and we're looking forward to getting into some Titans content with you coming up next week.
All right. Thanks, Buck. Appreciate it.